everybody.
I'm Tamara.
And I'm Austin.
And welcome to Pop Daydreams.
This is Pop Daydreams.
Woo! And today we are going to be giving you a little history lesson.
We're doing something a little bit different.
About the one, the only, the
Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey, the elusive Shantus, songbird supreme.
We are going to go in depth into her life, her music, her career. Everything.
Everything. Everything that you wanted to know, everything that you needed to know. And by the end of this, you're going to be saying, wow, I owe Mariah Carey an apology.
We have so much information about literally everything.
So let's just get right into it. We don't have much time. So
we don't have enough time. We spent too much time in the intro. Let's just get started.
Okay. So Mariah Carey, I also want to say that I was just going about my life thinking that she didn't have a middle name. And then I looked up something about her and it said that her middle name was Angela. But then in another, thing, it said that she didn't have a middle name. And that's why Monroe, her daughter, doesn't have a middle name as well. So I'm kind of like, what is the truth? I don't know. We don't know if she has a middle name or not. But
there's a lot of elusive things about this woman because people are also not entirely sure if she was born in 1969 or 1970.
And, you know, the world may never know, and that's how she wants it. So
she doesn't work with numbers. She specifically says she doesn't work with
years. She's not that good at math. She doesn't really know. She's eternally 12. She's eternally 12, and that's just the end of it. But anyway, so Mariah Carey, I'm going to say she doesn't have a middle name. Just a couple of overview facts. She has a 5-octave range, a whistle register, has been named the Songbird Supreme, has 19 number one hits.
Many of which she has wrote herself.
All except for one, and which was a cover. Wrote the last Christmas classic ever. The
Very
only
true.
Artist to have her first singles go number one. And I feel like she's just perfect. So
we felt like she was a great singer to start this history lesson segment with.
She has such a dense storyline.
History.
Yeah. So, early life. She was born and raised in Long Island.
Long Island, New York.
New York, baby. And, you know, she was always just a creative child, and she wrote poetry, and she just always loved music.
She was around music her entire life because her mom was a singer herself, and she was also a vocal coach.
And her mom also, she also says that her mom named her Mariah Carey because she felt like it was going to be a stage name. She felt that it was a stage name, and that she, like, Mariah jokes that sometimes she thinks her mom planned for her to be, like, a star. But, you know, maybe she had points.
Well, I guess it kind of worked out for her.
Yeah. So she grows up as a teenager. She realizes that she wants to be a singer, so she moves to Manhattan at the age of 18 with a couple of friends, and then she's working as, like, a waitress, and she's recording demos, and she actually lands a job as a background singer for the singer Brenda K. Starr. And as a background singer, you know, Brenda was hearing her voice and was like, oh my god, this girl, we gotta get something going, because there's something here. So she decided to take Mariah to a party where a bunch of record executives were going to be, and she was going to force them to listen to Mariah Carey's demo. And wow. Boy, did she ever. She was actually handing the demo over to one record executive, but then Tommy Mottola. I want to call him something else this whole time. What should we call him? The devil? which you'll understand. I'm calling.
Yeah, we'll get to why he is a very controversial.
I don't want
to
give his name any credit ever, so I'm going to call him Corn because I hate Corn.
What? I was thinking something more just like tea or something a little bit more generic.
Oh. Okay. No, I'm going to stick with Corn. So
okay, I guess Tommy Mottola is going to be Corn from now on.
So if I say Corn, I'm talking about Tommy Mottola. Great. Anyway, so, and that's, he's going to be mentioned a lot. So Tommy Mottola, after the party, or during the party, he left early, listened to the demo, loved it so much that he turned around, went back to the party, but Mariah had already left. So he spent like a week trying to track her down so he could, like, have a meeting with her. And then they had a meeting, and then from there, she was signed to Columbia Records.
And that was it.
And that was the start of it all, girl. So,
which is so crazy because just listening to her on the radio or just listening to her songs out and about, you would have no idea about this just random encounter.
Nope.
That literally just set her off.
She literally, like, she was 19.
Just by her just being at that party and having Brenda hand out that tape at the right time to the right person.
Well,
set her up to be one of the most successful singers ever.
Well, Brenda knew that, like, they were going to be there. Like, the intention for her to go to this was to go to this party to become, like, get signed. So that's,
well,
so I'm like, Brenda,
smart.
Period. Like, who, like, you are a great person. Thank you for your service. Anyway, so from there, Korn, at this point, was literally, I forgot to research about him because I hate him, but I'm pretty sure that he was married or had just got divorced after being married for 19 years. He's like significantly older than her, like 10-ish years maybe.
I know he's very much older than, like, she is.
I want to say like 12 or 10 years, but she was 19 and he was like almost in his 40s. So, and he was the head of Sony Music, which is the parent company of Columbia, which she was signed under. And Korn wanted someone to rival Whitney Houston, who was really popular at the time. And it was not that, not because Mariah Carey wanted to rival Whitney Houston. It was literally his idea and very inappropriate and annoying. So he was trying to breed someone that could rival her. And thus, Mariah Carey's debut album was born. So her first album was called Mariah Carey. And the first single, the debut single, was called Vision of Love.
And it did very well.
Like, to say the least. It went number one, which, like, what? This needs to be said. Okay. Until about, like, 2013, everyone needs to understand that people were going out and buying music. Like, you have... like, I don't know how old y'all are. I'm not even that old. But I think you need to understand. So when it says, like, like, so-and-so sold 50 million copies, that means that 50 million people went outside of their homes, went to Target, and got the music, okay? They weren't just in their house streaming it. So that's, like, a big deal. The facts just speak for itself, girl. Like, I mean, I'm just saying. This album sold 6 million copies.
And that was only in the United States.
Yeah. So it did way more globally.
On top of all of that, Mariah likes to drive home the fact that she considers herself a songwriter before singer.
Exactly.
And she had such a hand in the development and the creation and the writing and the production of this album. And it still performed that well.
Exactly. And she was only, what, 19?
I think she said in that Genius interview that she had them specifically put in her contract when she first signed with Columbia that she is going to have a very large part in developing the album. Like, she didn't want them to just say, oh, you're gonna work with this writer, this is the person that's gonna produce it. She had it put specifically in writing that she's gonna have a big hand in this.
Yeah, which is crazy because we're gonna get into it later. At the time, she didn't even have that big of a hand in it. Like, you'll see how different this album is from the albums later that she really had complete creative control. So, 5 singles, all went number one. Those singles were Vision of Love, Love Takes Time, Someday, I Don't Want to Cry, and There's Got to Be a Way. Personally, I think Someday is so underrated. That song's so good.
I love that song. That's my favorite song of the album.
Period. And there it is. So, I think mine is Vision of Love just because I have a personal inside joke with it, but it's great. I love this woman. So, 1991, Emotions comes out, which is her sophomore album. And we all know what Emotions sounds like. I wish I could play it for you. But right off the bat.
That's something you have got to do on your own.
Yes. Right off the bat, this woman is just proving to be supreme. I just don't know what else to say about that. Like, so she wanted, so Emotions was the lead single, obviously. And she wanted Can't Let Go, another song from the album, to be the next single. But for some reason, they didn't really want that to happen. So Columbia removed Can't Let Go from stores, and it didn't actually go number one, but it did go number two. So, oh no. What a flop. Like,
that's just a testament to her star power, if she could literally have Sony making an effort to sabotage the sales.
Yeah.
And it still go number two.
Yeah, literally. That's true. And she, yeah, sorry. I'm just trying to read all my notes. So for the first album, until I think about, until Rainbow, so for like, I don't know how many albums that is. The woman has too many albums. But for a while, she worked with producer Walter, I can't say his last name, Afasaf Saif?
She worked with Walter.
Walter A. And he has worked with Whitney Houston, Destiny's Child, Luther Vandross, Toni Braxton, Barbara Streisand. He's worked with everyone. So just know that she's working with great people. And, you know, Emotions, I'm pretty sure. Did she? Wait, I didn't tell if it charted or not. Either way, that same year, she won 2 Grammys. Best Pop Vocal Performance, Female, and Best New Artist. So, not without even touring. Like, So, moving on. After Emotions, she won Mary's Corn. And that begins to start the, I would say, unfortunate events that happened to her life, in her life.
Yes.
So, we have to talk about this now. While Mariah Carey was married to Korn, I'm not going to say allegedly, but I don't really know how much, like, legally I can say. I'm just saying, so it has been reported and rumored that he locked her in the house and he wouldn't let her, like, go anywhere, and he would tell her what to wear, what to do, and, like, whatever, and was just very controlling in her life.
Do we know who said this?
She did. And right. Jermaine Dupri also did say some stuff about this. Like, because they were friends, like, early on. So he's talked about, like, how weird it was she couldn't, like, talk to people, and, like, Korn would, like, yeah. It, like, I don't think anyone has said, like, exactly what happened in fear of, like, especially at the time, because Korn was very powerful at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you search, you can find kind of what
you can happened. Definitely tell that. It was not a good situation.
Yeah.
It was not a situation where he was treating them as equals.
No. But also everyone keeps forgetting that he literally was the head of her label. So he had ultimately the creative control on whatever she was doing.
He was her boss.
Yeah. So he decided what singles got released. He decided basically, like, what songs made it to the album ultimately, like, he was in charge of her career, essentially, also while married to her, also while she was, like, early 20s. So, very susceptible. She had never had any type of relationship before that. So, girl, all that being said. So, after Emotions, her third album, Music Box, which, off that album comes Dream Lover, Hero, and Without You. Those are the singles. I love Dream Lover. That is a song.
That song sounds just like the music video. It sounds like you're just dancing in the field of flowers.
Literally. And the album went number one in the US, Australia, Austria, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, Portugal, Scotland, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. For all you girls that doubted my girl. It also is to date her highest selling album with 28 million copies.
That album went diamond in the United States.
Mama, diamond.
At least 10 million people walked out of their house, went to the store, and swiped their card or handed cash for this album.
just to put it in perspective. But as I mentioned before, Korn had all creative control over like what singles got released. So like her unreleased songs are sometimes better than the songs that she released. Like the song Do You Think of Me, which was supposed to be on Music Box, which was released as a B-side and you can only find it on a vinyl, which I do own, is literally one of her best songs. Like, and it's so annoying because he didn't want it to be on the album, and for whatever reason, like I would love to know his reasons, because
he clearly wanted to, he had a very specific vision for her. Because every time in all of the first three albums, even though they all have a little the same kind of sound, a lot of like some of the deeper cuts, like Now That I Know on Music Box,
yeah,
and some other ones, they have like those different qualities than just your standard R&B songs that she was really doing at the time. And it just really seems like he was trying to keep her in that R&B box and not letting her go down any other like dance route or R&B route.
Yeah, he really wanted her to be a pop star. Like, he did not want her to be anything else. And she was, like, okay at first, but then she, I feel like she wanted to be able to do whatever she wanted. And if she wanted to make a pop song, fine. If she wanted to make an R&B song, fine. And if she wanted to make a hip-hop song, fine. And he was like, no, you're only going to be a pop star. And she was forced to, like, kind of release songs that were more pop at the time. So after Music Box, she did tour. Like, she started touring at this point. That's partly why Music Box did so well, because people believed that she could sing this well now. And
she was out in the field.
Yeah.
Showing off.
But she, at the same time, she's still only, like, a lot of when I was doing research, like, even to this day, like, she only tours with, like, a bunch of days in between and not that long, because she wants to save her voice. Anyway, so 1994, big year. As if all the other ones haven't been any big. Tommy decides, you know, what if you recorded a Christmas album? Let's just switch it up. And it was very risky because not a lot of people...
Normally the only people that release Christmas albums are as they are coming to the end of their career. Yeah. Or maybe some would say that they are past their peak.
Yes.
Which was absolutely not the case for her at this point.
Oh, because no.
She's
coming
off of a diamond certified album.
She just loves Christmas. And she was like, okay. And then she literally wrote All I Want for Christmas Is You in 15 minutes. What? If I was given 3 days to write a song, I couldn't even do that. She just thought about it and she wrote it. And that album not only is just one of the best Christmas albums ever, she wrote the last Christmas classic. Like,
that is a Christmas standard.
And she was like, what, 24? With still years to come. Not to mention,
writing a song in 15 minutes.
She wrote a Christmas song.
I'm
going to
put a Christmas song on
it. The hardest songs to write are Christmas songs. And she wrote three of them.
I saw that she decorated her house in like July. For Christmas, the year that she was writing this stuff, just to get into the festive mood.
Yeah. And she just recorded this album, and it did numbers. Like,
it was well documented, though, that All I Want for Christmas Is You charted number one 25 years later in 2019.
It got its just desserts. Moving on. So after her Christmas album, she records Daydream, which is one of my personal favorites. And this is where you can find Fantasy, Always Be My Baby, Underneath the Stars, period. As many people know now, she recorded the Fantasy remix, which her label really did not want to happen. Like, no.
This is really where she starts to just say, you know what? I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And she was, at the time, really inspired by all of the hip-hop songs that she listened to as a kid, just living in New York, and really wanted to feature those beats mm-hmm. on her album, mm-hmm. and Fantasy is a perfect example of that.
Yes. She wanted ODB, Old Dirty Bastard of the Wu-Tang Clan, Rest His Soul, to be on the song so bad, and she actually said later that she got by only letting them hear the song, like, Fantasy and not any of his other songs, because they would not have let him be on the song. But it worked, and we all know the Fantasy remix. as the bop that it is today. And that is what started her having more creative control. And this was the album of the first like four that she had the most input on. And that really pissed off Korn. And she said that she didn't say anything at first when she, like her first three albums, whenever she really wanted to have input control, because she was insecure and just had, and was just very cautious and would just listen to whatever the people said because she was young. But since she felt like she was older and more confident, she felt more comfortable speaking up for herself and what she wanted to do. And this song, I mean, this album also holds One Sweet Day, which is, which not only is, was the longest number one single for 23 years before it was beat out by Old Town Road. Anyway, it also was sang at Princess Diana's memorial service. It also was sang accompanied by Boyz II Men, which I find the story for this song so funny because they both were just working on songs that sounded similar and just made the same
yeah,
one.
Yeah, she said that they literally called each other and they just completely happened to be writing a song that had the exact same theme and almost the exact same rhythm. And they were like, okay, well, put it together.
Yeah.
And, but they were, because not only was Mariah huge at this point, Boyz II Men was also huge at this point. And they didn't even have time to film another video, to meet up another day to film the video. So they just filmed the video as they were actually recording it.
Literally.
So all of those shots in the video are them actually recording it. It's not just for show.
Wow. Look, and there you have it. And...
and it worked.
And it worked, girl. It really did. So Daydream came out in 1995. At 1997, she separates from Tommy Mottola, thank God, and begins to work on her newest album, Butterfly, which she has said herself is her magnum opus, and I would have to agree with her.
She loves this album. She still talks about it so much.
So good.
And... it makes sense.
It makes sense.
Because is it my favorite Mariah album? Yeah.
It is?
Yes.
Oh,
this and Emancipation.
Period. Well, yeah, same.
But this, yeah.
Period. It's just, thank God. Like, it's just, it's because it's the first time where she had pretty much complete creative control over a project. And literally, she was... set free. She could just do what she wanted. And she literally felt like a butterfly. And
she spread her wings. She flew.
And she said herself about this album. She said, in the past, people were scared to let me explore different types of music that I loved and enjoyed. They saw me as having this instrument and they wanted to get the most use out of it. There were a lot of people around who were afraid of change. I was a value commodity. And they didn't want to lose that. I was encouraged to act drab because drab sells records. She was tired of it.
And she was over it. So she walked out in 1997 in her mini skirts and her short little dresses.
Mm-hmm. And recorded this album.
This album has everything.
Every single song on this album is perfect. The song Breakdown is still considered one of the best R&B songs ever. Because what she did with that song was so different for her, but also... like it just set the tone for everything she does in the rest of her life, because it's such a sad song but also so melodically just perfect. It's just the song The Roof means so much to me that, like, I was listening to Butterfly today just like in preparation, and I had listened to like half the album not even realizing it because it's just so second nature to me. And I was just, like, singing along and not even realizing that I was singing along. Anyway.
This album, you've got the slower piano ballads like Butterfly. You've got the great hip-hop and R&B infused songs like Breakdown in the Roof. You've got house songs like the Butterfly Reprise.
She just has so many different genres of music in all of her catalog, honestly. And people still think of her... as just R&B or just pop or just whatever. But she's not. She's so much more than that. And on Butterfly, she really proved that she could do more than just be this drab pop star.
Yeah, Butterfly, it's hard to put in a box because it has so many different styles that it was influenced by.
Yeah, the funny part is, what my favorite thing about this album is that the song Butterfly was actually supposed to be a house song the whole time, but she was writing it and then made it a ballad. And then just made another version of it. So then after the success of Butterfly, she's finally free. She's changed her image. She's being the Mariah that she's always wanted to be. She releases Rainbow, which was the last album released under the label of Sony/Columbia. And she just wanted to be off that label so bad that she recorded this album in 3 months in Italy. 3 months. And that album came the number one hit, Heartbreaker, which is my favorite number one hit. And it also gave a little man by the name of Jay-Z his first number one. And really? Like, yes, that was Jay-Z's first number one, and like she basically like helped put Jay-Z on the map.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, literally, that is a fact. Anyway, so she wanted Heartbreaker to be the single, and she also wanted Crybaby and another one to be a single, but the label didn't want to promote those singles. Was at this point, so now we're getting into the part where why I hate Tommy Mottola so much, because he was sabotaging her career because he hated her so much, and he was intentionally not promoting her. He like literally was trying to sabotage her career, and the fact that Mariah Carey should have way more number one hits than 19 is insane and true. And after that album, she finally was free from that label.
So you would think it would all be smooth sailing.
Yes. So at this point, how long? She's been in the game for 10 years now.
She's only, out of her 6 albums, she's really only had 3 of them that she had a lot of input in.
And so you would think that on the other side of that, she would finally be like, you know, relieved, happy that she can finally do the things that she wants to do, which on one hand...
And she had the leverage to get a record contract outside of Sony that she could specifically say, I'm going to be in control of the production.
Right. She has the weight at this point. She has the credits to back it up. But, so, she was working on a movie called All That Glitters at the time. That was the working title. And she was also working on the soundtrack for that movie. And she... Okay, there's a lot. Okay, so Glitter...
Glitter's a whole thing.
Glitter's a whole thing, but it's actually... I don't even realize... I knew how important it was, but I didn't... Like, today, I just remembered, like, God, this is really important to her life. So, she was working on this movie. It was her first, like, acting thing. She was supposed to work on the soundtrack for this. So remember how I said that Tommy Mottola was trying to sabotage her career? At this point, it's like, I'll say she probably started like 2000. And Tommy Mottola also had discovered a little woman by the name of Jennifer Lopez at the time. And he was trying to find someone to rival with Mariah Carey because, like I said, he hated her. So Mariah Carey had asked to sample this one song that she was going to use in her lead single off the album Glitter, Loverboy. And she had asked to get the license for the album, but then Tommy Mottola got, like, used the sample from that song in a J-Lo song, but right before Mariah Carey was going to use it. And then just released the J-Lo song in an attempt to sabotage her Glitter album. So in the midst of Tommy Mottola trying to ruin her life, she is filming a movie. She has a new relationship. She had been dating someone for 3 years. She just broke up with that person. She's at a new label. She's filming a movie. She's recording a soundtrack. And she literally has a nervous breakdown. And she's hospitalized for 2 weeks. And this is all publicly in the news. And they wanted to release the album in August of 2001. But because she had been hospitalized, they wanted to wait because she wanted to like promote it and stuff. So, but you can't do that if you're in the hospital. So they waited to promote it and to release it on guess what day, everyone? 9/11. That's right. And there's no way anyone could have known.
Nope. Glitter just had the unfortunate luck of being released on the tragic day of September 11th, 2001.
And she says herself that because 9/11 was such a tragedy, and the only other thing that happened that day was that she released this album, people use that as a chance to, like, bash on her album and to, like, to say it was bad or just, like, use it as, like, the punchline of the day.
People use it as a distraction from everything else that was going on at the time.
Right. And you would think that they would listen to the album and think, wow, it's so good. But because some of the sounds of the album, I would say, were ahead of its time.
It was very different than everything else that was on the radio at the time.
Yeah.
Because Glitter was an 80s influenced dance pop album to go along with the movie that takes place during the 80s.
Right. And so people didn't really get it. And then the movie came out and people said it was terrible, and people still say it's like the worst movie of all time and that like it's just the worst, and like you can't really find, you can find it on YouTube, but like you can't like all yeah,
it, this movie is, the actual copy of the movie is an enigma. It's so difficult to find because you can't really buy it anywhere.
Yeah,
the DVD on eBay is like $12, which we are planning on buying eventually.
Yeah,
and watching, we just haven't gotten around to it.
And I, yes, and so, like, you can still, the reviews on this video, I mean, this movie, are so bad. Like, people hate this movie, and I have not seen it, granted, but I do not, I could not imagine that this movie is that bad. I just can't.
That'll be something to stay tuned for when we actually do watch it.
Yeah, so, if you have seen Glitter, let us know in the comments, but anywho.
Yeah, if anyone has actually seen it, let us know if it is that bad.
I just
or
don't
people
think
are just
is.
Being mean to her.
I think that my friend has seen it and he said it wasn't that bad. I think that people just liked to be mean to her, and I think that people were just like riding on the wave being critical of her. And I'm like, I can name like three movies that were terrible that I saw that were made this year. So I don't know. Anyway. Also, her dad died that year.
Really?
Yeah, her dad died in 2001.
Oh, no.
So like, but I think that happened before Glitter. So like
the 2001 just was all around a very rough year for her because she was severely overworked. She had a lot of personal struggles. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
She wasn't that year as well. Yeah, but she didn't publicly say she had
but
been diagnosed.
Yeah, she kept that to herself.
Until 2018. But she literally is bipolar and is dealing with all of the stress. And not only that, was releasing Glitter, which is a great album. That's the thing, is like, I love Mariah Carey, and I was advised to say this, that in the midst of Mariah Carey having probably, in my opinion, the worst year of her life, she continuously was releasing great songs. Like, Mariah Carey has never in her life made bad music. You would think that whenever someone is going through something, they don't want to do anything, much less make great songs that would go on to win awards. Like, even when she was getting divorced from Tommy Mottola, she was making Butterfly. Like, how do you make such great songs in the midst of your life shambling? Like, what? And
her cover of I Didn't Mean to Turn You on Glitter is also one of my favorite Mariah songs.
So good.
Just in case anyone was wondering.
Yes. And so after all of the mess with Glitter happens, you still can't find Glitter on streaming services. Like, it is not released.
This was her one and only album on Virgin.
Yeah.
With her Virgin contract.
In 2000, I think it was 17, though, they did Justice for Glitter, hashtag Justice for Glitter did happen, and it was available on iTunes, and I think it went number one on iTunes. So it finally got the justice that it deserved, but not at the time.
Yeah, I think you can buy it online, like the album on like the iTunes store, but you can't stream it anywhere.
No, never, like at all. You can find it on YouTube though, so.
Yeah, you can.
Whatever. Anyway.
I listen to it, and we listen to it.
Yeah. So after Glitter, she, I feel like, was eager to move on. And she released the album Charm Bracelet, which with the Lambs is a fave because we all know what happened.
This is on her, she got another record contract, this time with Universal.
Yeah. And she ended her contract with Virgin Records, and even though like she wanted them to say that they canceled their contract, but they say terminated, which further like made it seem like they dropped her because of glitter was so bad, but like it really, like, it was kind of because of that, but it was more just like,
it was a very complex situation.
Yeah. And so basically all that to say, everyone was writing things about her that were just an exaggeration of the truth, just because, just at the expense of her, like it wasn't fair to her. And so after Charm, I mean, because so Charm Race, it debuted at number 3. People were still saying like, oh, that's terrible, Mariah. She had a number 3 album on Billboard. Like, that's not a flop. Like, it didn't flop, everyone. Like, it would have been a flop if it didn't chart at all. It was number 3, okay? Like, this also was in the midst of the I Don't Know Her thing with J-Lo.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually really important because this started this whole stipulation that she was a diva. Well, I feel like that kind of started before, but like this was feeding into that. And somewhat, she was on doing a TV show or an interview overseas, and this reporter was just asking her about all these different artists, such as like Beyonce and probably someone else, I don't know. And he asked her if she knew J-Lo, and she said, "I don't know her." And I personally don't think that she was trying to be shady in the moment. Like, I think she was just like, "I don't know her." Like, she probably like doesn't like J-Lo. Like, I do not know if she likes J-Lo. I don't think she like cares, but I do think at the moment, like, I don't think she was like, let me take this as an opportunity to be shady. I think she was just like trying to find something as neutral as possible.
But she was just trying to move on.
Yeah, I think she was just trying to find something as neutral as possible to say, but people still took that as like, and it's because of this public like feud with Tommy Mottola, J-Lo, and her. People just wanted to feed into the fact that she was mad that J-Lo essentially like stole her songs, and really it was Tommy. But I just would like to say about that, even if Mariah Carey was being shady to J-Lo, she would have every right to, because J-Lo was literally created to rival her and they've never met, so she literally didn't know her. And it wasn't that deep, y'all. And I hate this stigma that she's a diva, because one, she's not. Two, now she thinks it's funny, so she just kind of plays into it. But like this whole like stigma of women being divas because they say something is not true. And I feel like we've moved past that as a society. But like at the time, it was really like to bring her down as like a person, and to like mm-hmm. make it seem like she was a bad person, when in reality she's just hilarious. And she just, like, I feel like all the times that people say she's a diva, like the whole like darling thing, like she thinks it's a joke. Like, she has said so many times that it's funny. Like, she's not actually like,
that's her sense of humor.
She's one of the nicest people, and people just love to, like, this woman has literally done nothing to no one. It's just all people that people think that she's done. Like, this whole I don't know her thing, like, people like kind of made up this feud. I mean, I understand, because Tommy did literally steal the song she was going to use, but that wasn't J-Lo's doing.
Yeah, Tommy was just using J-Lo as a front to get back at Mariah.
And at first I was like, fuck J-Lo. But then as I did more research, I was like, okay, it really, like, she didn't really have any say in that situation.
Because it could have been the same situation where J-Lo didn't have a lot of say in her production, because it was Sony and all of them that were making decisions.
Right. I do have my own qualms with J-Lo's career, but that's for a different episode. So, moving on. Charm Bracelet is actually a great album, and she looks great. She sounds great. She has a song dedicated to her dad called Sunflowers for Alfred Roy.
She wanted to do an album to kind of show people that she still had it, and that glitter was just not gonna trash her career.
Right. After Charm Bracelet, she releases the one, the only, The Emancipation of Mimi. In 2005. 3 years later. So, we all this know album. Her. We all know her. I feel like it needs no introduction.
No.
It has We Belong Together, Shake It Off. It's like that. Fly Like a Bird. Get your number. Just like, say something. Every song in this album is perfect. Every single one. And it went number one. We Belong Together was the song of the year.
14 weeks, number one, We Belong Together.
Also, I would like to say that this woman released a gospel song when she hasn't really done it in a while. And Fly Like a Bird is my favorite gospel song. And it should be yours too.
It's crazy that because Emancipation is has a lot of hip hop on it, and the fact that she can go from that to a gospel song on one album,
yeah,
is crazy.
All I'm gonna say is, if you ever doubt Mariah Carey ever, what you need to do, go in your room, light a few candles, and then listen to Fly Like a Bird, and then you won't have any doubts anymore.
That is a song that I'm sure not everyone listening to this has heard before, but I think is the song that you should listen to.
Yeah.
After this.
Of any song that, of any album of any song, I think that you need to go home and listen to, I'm picking Fly Like a Bird. You're right.
Yeah.
Because it just, no one can sing that song like Mariah Carey. No one. No one. I'm sorry. No one. The build of that song, the climax of that song.
The progression. The choir.
The choir. Like, wow. Anyway, so.
She did win 3 Grammys for Emancipation.
Yes. And she called it the Emancipation of Mimi because, one, for obvious reasons, two, she thought that Mariah Carey, the Emancipation of Mariah Carey sounded stupid. she said it sounded, quote, obnoxious. And Mimi, it was a nickname that only, like, her real friends called her. But then, who was it? L.A. Reid said that it should be Mimi because you're finally letting people into, like, your the real side of you and, like, your fun, like, side. And, like, this, and by calling it the Emancipation of Mimi, it's just letting people into this other side of you, you know?
Yeah. This album, she said that she really was not focusing on what she, how she thought people were going to react to it. She wasn't worried about the reviews of it, when it was going to come out. She really wanted to put her all into it and make an album that she really liked. Yeah. And that she would listen to and that she was proud of for this.
Yeah.
And it really paid off.
It did. And my favorite thing about this album is that, besides Fly Like a Bird, is that at the end of We Belong Together, I didn't know this until my friend told me this, and then I finally like read something about it. The reason why you know how We Belong Together is, "We belong together," with that long note?
Yeah.
That wasn't actually not supposed to be there. She was recording the song and she was working on like the background vocals and like the end of the song. And mm-hmm. L.A. Reid was coming into the studio and was bringing like these like important like financial people. And she knew that he was going to ask her to like play something for them. And she uh-huh. wasn't done with this song. So she was like, "I got to hurry up and finish the song." So she just did this one big long note and just called it a day. Which I think is
all right.
I think that's so like she just was like they were walking and she was like, "Okay, we belong together." And it just keeps going.
I mean, if you can do it, do it. Why waste your time trying to write another like 10 seconds of lyrics when you can just keep that note going?
I think it's so funny. Like I can just see. I just think it's so funny that her solution to that was just like, "I'm just gonna scream for 10 seconds." Like I'm gonna do it, whatever. I think that's so. I love her. Oh, okay. Anyway, so she's back. We love her. Everyone's happy now. In 2008, she marries Nick Cannon. She releases E equals MC squared, which I thought was just because it's funny because her initials are MC, but no, it's because it's Emancipation of Mimi squared.
Oh my gosh!
I had no idea that that was why. I literally had no idea.
Oh my god. Like, you know what? Okay.
That's literally why. She said it. It's essentially like if something said, if Emancipation of Mimi is like the main course, E equals MC squared is the dessert.
Okay. Like,
she was just having fun. It was, she calls it one of her most expressive albums. And it really just was like, and a continuation, I guess, of Emancipation of Mimi. Like, she was just having fun, finally doing what she wanted to do, not really worrying about, like, what people were going to think about it, just, like, doing what she wanted. And now that I have that in mind, it actually makes a lot of sense. Because you can just tell on the album that she was having fun, because those songs are crazy.
The Touch My Body video is one of the funniest music videos I have still ever seen.
Yes.
Still to this day, it is so funny. The fact that she had Kenneth from 30 Rock
yeah,
as a computer geek fixing her Wi-Fi,
like,
is so funny to me.
The fact that she's just, she is one of the funniest people, and she does not get enough credit, first of all. Secondly, that music video is one of my favorite music videos ever. Thirdly, her in that gray or silver dress, oh my god, she looks great. Like, and so after Equals MC Squared, in 2009, a year later, she releases Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel, which she calls like a love letter to her fans. And a lot of the songs are personal, and, you know, there's some about Nick Cannon, and like my favorite song right before I became a lamb, Up At My Face, which I still think has my favorite bridge. If we were two-legged walks, even the Harvard University class of 2010 couldn't put us back together again. That is so funny. Like, what? Oh, we didn't talk about Obsessed.
All I gotta say with Obsessed is that before I was on TikTok, I was on Apple Music, like many of you. And I go to the search on my phone on the Apple Music app, and I look under the trending, because it'll show you the trending when you go to search something. And the first thing to show up was, "Why Are You So Obsessed With Me?" And I'm like, why is that song trending? Why is that song trending 10 years later?
Mm-hmm.
And that trend was what introduced me to TikTok. No. That's what sold me. That dance is what sold me. That was like, okay, I guess it's time for me to get on TikTok.
Wow. Anyway, so then she releases in 2010, Merry Christmas to You, which is her second Christmas album, which has what I want to go number one this year, Oh Santa. All I Want for Christmas Is You had its time. Great. It's time for Oh Santa to have its moment. Okay? I love that song.
Well, we got 7 months.
I'm going to start promoting. This is my first promotion.
You got time.
Thank you. What else are we going to do? And, you know, it's a Christmas album. Great album. Listen to it. She's doing what she does best. Singing. Talking about Christmas. Being great.
Festive.
Festive. I love the cover of it. I think it's so cute. And then 4 years later, she takes a little break. And she has some kids. Rock and Roll. I didn't realize this, which is really stupid. Their names are Monrockin' and Monroe. And Monroe is named after Marilyn Monroe. That is... I am so stupid. I had no idea.
Did she name them that for Rock and Roll?
No. I think that's just a coincidence.
Okay.
I think she... Monroe's name is because Marilyn Monroe is her favorite, like, person. Like, she idolizes Marilyn Monroe. And Monrockin', Nick Cannon proposed to her in a Moroccan-styled room. So he was like the combination of their love and whatever.
All right.
And so she just calls him Rock and Roll, or hashtag Dim Kids. And I saw him on the train once, and it was the best day of my life, and it was the craziest day ever. And so that's why there was such a long gap between Merry Christmas to You and Me, I Am Mariah, her next album.
Because she became a mother.
Yeah, she was a mom. She had twins. Only legends have twins. And she needed time to rest, to regroup, to take a break, which I feel like is warranted. Like, I feel like that's fine.
Yeah. You got to raise two kids at once.
Yeah, girl. Ooh, Chile. And this is where people don't understand that when you have a child, one child, your voice changes. Your voice gets deeper. Like, that is just what happens. Amongst all the other physical changes that you go through, you just change, much less having two at the same time. So when you get older, your voice gets like a little deeper. And so people love to say that her voice is different now because whatever, but it's literally because she had two kids, and that's just what happens when you get older.
Yeah. Of course her voice changed. Everyone's voice has changed.
Everyone's voice has changed. But the thing is, girl, she's never made bad music, and it still stayed the same. It's just her tone is a little different now. And people like to use that as an excuse to say, like, oh, she can't hit the same high notes, or, oh, whatever, whatever. That's not true. It's just she has to be more strategic with it because she's older now. That's it. Like, that's it. Anyway, that being said, she released the album Me, I Am Mariah, The Elusive Chanteuse. And a chanteuse is, so it's like a person who makes club music or something, right?
Yeah, it's like a female performer in like some sort of like nightclub. I believe it's like an older word from like earlier 20th century.
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to be more like a showgirl.
But it still works.
Yeah, but it works for her. She's a modern day showgirl.
Yeah. This album, she didn't get any number ones off this album. It did produce the song hashtag beautiful with Miguel, I think is so good.
Also, I remember that video premiering on American Idol.
Oh, cool.
Which is that, because that came out during her brief stint as a judge on American Idol.
Yes, which I actually did want to talk about just briefly, that I was thinking, I was like, why did she do that? Like, who did she know? And it's because she worked with Randy Jackson.
Randy Jackson and her have done a lot of work together.
Yeah, and he worked a lot on Me, I Am Mariah, and I'm pretty sure Memoirs, too.
I think he did some stuff with Emancipation, too.
Yeah, they're just friends. So he just asked her, and she said yeah. So I was thinking, why did she do that? And, yeah. And the whole Nicki and her thing, all I'm going to say about that is that if you still are upset with Mariah for quote-unquote being a diva on American Idol, then that's on you. And that's not even shade to Nicki Minaj. Anyway, so, she was on American Idol in 2013. And that album is also really, really good. My personal favorites are Hashtag Beautiful, Thirsty, and Heavenly. And it also has a Mary J. Blige feature, so that's cool. And then, finally, we get to talk about The Grand Supreme. My favorite, other than Butterfly, my favorite Mariah Carey album is actually Caution, which is her most recent album. Other than technically Merry Christmas Deluxe Anniversary Edition, which that's just a re-release.
Yeah, this is her most recent original.
Yeah. Caution. What to say about this album?
This album, first of all, the cover is great. I love that cover.
It's so good. It came out in 2018. Actually, the criticism of this album is really good. It was very highly critically acclaimed. It's just that no one really listened to it. Like, it was, like, on all of the reviews that I saw, most people gave it, like, 4 stars or, like, a B. Which is, like, fine, whatever. I give it an A, but whatever. I'll take it. And it's a perfect 10-song album, like I love to say. And it's, her more mature voice. I think that her voice in this album sounds maybe the most different, but at the same time, it's still the same.
Still has the same quality to it.
Yeah. She said that they all tell different stories, but they're all on the same album. And, oh, I forgot to say that she got divorced to Nick Cannon in 2016. So now she's dating Brian Tanaka, who is the inspiration for a lot of the songs on Caution. And 25 years into her career, Caution is hailed as one of her best albums. I think personally that Caution is, honestly, I would say her third best album.
All right.
And that is my Kiara Smith opinion. I genuinely think that of all her albums, Caution is her third best. And this album kind of came and went commercially, which is really annoying because of how good it is. And she has features with Slick Rick, Blood Orange, Ty Dolla $ign, and Gunna. And first of all, she got Slick Rick to do a verse, which in the black community, girl, how did she do that? And the song Giving Me Life, I think, is the best song on the album. Although I did say Eighth Grade was the best song on the album at first. But after giving it more consideration, I think Giving Me Life is the best song on the album. But I think my personal favorite is Eighth Grade. Anyway.
I just think it's crazy that she is this far into her career and she still has original stuff to say.
Yeah.
Like Eighth Grade. Something that's so reflective.
Yeah. I'm not your world. I'm not your light. Oh my. Oh! Don't get me started. Don't get me started. I listen to this album at least once a day.
And she was still able to do something modern and that wasn't repetitive of all her past songs.
I also,
for me, Caution sounds so much different than the rest of her discography.
Yeah, I would say, I was going to say, like, her, I feel like Me, I Am Mariah kind of gave, like, a peek to where she was going, but not really. Like, I feel like Caution is so different from, it's kind of, like, darker.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Like, but not, like, in a somber way, or, like, even, like, a scary way. It's just, like,
it has those, like, dark, like, almost, like, trap beats on some of them.
Yeah. It seems, like, in a way, it seems more serious. I don't know why that makes sense, but it does. I don't really know. I think it charted at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 200, I think. I'm pretty sure that's...
I think it did, too.
Which, like, isn't a flop.
Yeah, it was number 5.
It's not a flop, so fine. But it's, like, you know, like, for Mariah, sure, whatever. Most people really don't even know that she released an album in 2018, and that is a crime. Most people really think that, like, she's kind of stopped in 2009, and that's not true. And with that, we have the deluxe anniversary edition of Merry Christmas, which was released right before All I Want for Christmas Is You, became her number 19, number one single. And she also gave a new, very short interlude of the Sugar Plum Fairy interlude, which is so good. It's only 40 seconds. I hate this woman. Anyway, and so there you have it. That is basically Mariah Carey's career to date.
That's pretty much everything about this woman's life.
Yeah, and I would just like to say at the end of this whole spiel, for those of you who are going to listen to all of this and say, that's fine, but she still can't sing live anymore. Womp womp. Okay. Because that is actually a very large criticism that she gets. Because all of these things we were talking about are mostly about her studio success. But
that's very true.
She, like I said, she, in the beginning of her career, didn't even want to tour because she was afraid that singing her songs back to back would cause a strain in her voice. Someone who has songs that are so hard to sing, like Fly Like a Bird, cannot logically ace every single performance ever. She has been performing for almost 30 years, and you are expecting her to have a perfect performance every single time? That's just not going to happen.
Even if she's had a few mess-ups,
yes,
some of which have been higher profiles than others, I think we should take it upon ourselves to be a lot kinder to everyone outside of Mariah, just anybody.
Yeah.
If you see anyone has a rough performance, to understand that that may not be indicative of their artistry. Sometimes we all just have our off days sometimes.
For people to say, like, oh, Mariah Carey can't sing live anymore because of the whole New Year's Eve thing that happened in 2017, or technically, I don't know, 2016, but right into 2017, that was really unfortunate. Because of that, I think that's probably why Caution didn't do so well, because it happened, like, a year before. And that was very unfortunate, because it was just an unfortunate thing. Like, you've all seen the clip. I know you've seen it. But because of that one performance, people literally, like, discredited her entire career. That's insane. Like, that's insane. And also, what else was she supposed to do? She couldn't hear. If you can't hear when you're singing, girl, what do you want to happen? First of all, she can sing live. Click Mariah Carey 2020. She had a Vegas show. Those performances, I was so proud of her, because she was hitting the high notes. She was performing perfectly, and no one even cared, other than, like, the Lambs. Like, no one writes about how she's still hitting those notes. No one writes about how her tone has changed, but it's still perfect. No one writes about the great things in her life. All the critics love to write such negative things about her because she's a woman, one. Also, not to mention, a Black woman. On top of all of that, on top of everything we just said, she's a Black woman. Many of her songs are about being biracial, not thinking that she fits in with the white people or the Black people. Like, despite this woman being so constantly ridiculed and discredited, this woman is a genius. She's a genius. And people love to discredit her for a couple of mistakes that she made. Are you kidding me? Like, God, I just, it makes me so mad.
And on that note, please, when you close out of this, go to Emancipation, go to the last song, and listen to Fly Like a Bird. And I promise you won't be disappointed.
I promise you.
Because I'm like, I guarantee that you are going to like that song.
All right. And on that note, everyone say, I'm sorry, Mariah Carey. Well,
I'm Austin.
And I am Kiara. And that was Pop Daydream's history lesson on Mariah Carey.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Stream Fly Like a Bird. Stream caution. All right.
See you later.
Thanks for listening.